This is the year to stop overpaying for your family plan. So choose a Straight Talk wireless family plan. Unlimited data, talk, and text on a reliable 5G network. And you can get a new line starting at $25 per line per month for 4 lines, plus taxes and fees and no contracts. That's good decision making. Available at Walmart and on straighttalk.com. Family plan discount with 4 lines, all on the Silver Unlimited plan. Not combinable with auto pay discount. In times of traffic, your data may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Video streams at up to 480p. Hey, it's Bobby Bones. Hey, I just want to say thanks to everybody who has stepped up for the St. Jude kids. St. Jude's doing incredible work fighting childhood cancer. And because of donations like the ones that you give, families never receive a bill ever from St. Jude for treatment, travel, housing, food, none of that. Help St. Jude stop childhood cancer. Become a partner in hope. Get this awesome new This Shirt Saves Lives shirt. It's going to look great on you. So join all the doctors, researchers, and me in this fight. All right, text the word Bobby. It's only 6 numbers to 785-833. Again, text the word Bobby to just these 6 numbers, 785-833.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count for your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
I'm still wondering if I'm just going to absolutely fall apart one day because I've just stayed so, you know, you keep pushing and stay so distracted.
Welcome, episode 437, Terry Clark. I don't think I'd ever met Terry. I feel like I had known Terry. You know, it's funny, too, when Terry left, Eddie was over at the house, and so was Ben, because we work out at usually in that spot every day. And Eddie goes, "It's competition, huh?" I was like, "What?" And he was like, "You have a little beef? Competition?" I was like, "What are you talking about?" And she did a morning show years ago at a station across the street with Blair Garner. And I didn't even think about that. So now I'm angry.
So now we're not putting it out.
No, not at all.
Okay, I'll delete it.
But I guess, you know, I've just heard such wonderful things about her, and I know her music, obviously, that I don't even associate her with that because I don't think I wanted to, because then I would want to, you know, end it. But she's awesome. I mean, it was so cool to have her over, and we could have probably gone another 30 minutes or so.
One of the longer ones we've done recently.
It was one of those where I started to feel guilty I was keeping her too long, but I just like hanging out, and I liked hearing her story. And I think she felt pretty comfortable. We got into a groove there where she got pretty comfortable too. But Terry Clark's awesome. She's had, you know, 6 number ones, over 20 singles. We talk about, she grew up in Medicine Hat, Alberta, Canada. One of the coolest towns I've ever heard of. Medicine Hat. Is there a Medicine Hat? Like, what's Medicine Hat named after? Was there a Medicine Hat, a guy who came to town wearing a hat that had medicine in it?
Maybe.
Yeah, I know. She's in the Canadian Music Hall of Fame. She's also been a member of the Grand Ole Opry for 20 years, which this year she goes back and does her 20-year, like, big party. But I'm just going to let you get to it because I've been a fan for a long time. She was super cool. We talk about her new music and her tour, and we only can somewhat get into some of it because apparently we'll go to country music jail if we share too much of it.
Yeah.
But I think we said enough to where people know what's up. At Terry Clark Music on Instagram, I had a really good time. Here she is, Terry Clark.
Were you wearing your hat when you drove in? Because I felt like I saw a silhouette of you in your hat when you came to the gate. Were you wearing
the hat
in the car?
I think I was wearing it, yeah.
Yeah, it's a pretty intimidating silhouette because you weren't driving, if I'm right, right?
No.
And I saw you drive through because I beeped the gate open, and I was like, ah, there she is.
It could have been Beyonce.
You know, it could have been. But you have what I can pull off at times, too, is I have such a signature, like, extra part in you, which is my glasses, that if I take them off, even if I put on clear ones, I've had people not know who I am.
Oh, fully. Yeah, it's – I can walk through the crowd that – I just played a show in front of and take the hat off and some of the makeup off and just put shorts and a t-shirt and walk right into the audience at a festival I just played literally half an hour before, and nobody even looks at me.
It is such a part of your performance identity, the same way my glasses are.
Trademark.
Yeah, where people just know me because of it. Do you ever regret? Because I like that I can peel them off and I can have a little bit of anonymity. Mm-hmm. Do you ever regret people and wearing the cowboy hat or no?
I don't. I feel like, especially at a time when no women were wearing them at all, mm-hmm. it was all the guys wearing them. It set me apart and it gave me a brand and, like I just said, a trademark that nobody else had. And it, you know, it's something that I'm from Alberta, Canada. You know, it's the prairies of Canada is very country,
sure.
It's very ranchy. It's very, you know, I grew up wearing hats, you know, singing around my hometown and stuff. So, and then when I moved to Nashville, I sold Western apparel up in Hendersonville at a Western store for a while. So it all felt like a very natural thing for me. And musically, you know, what I've done musically, it all fit together. But I do feel like it does. Reba told me one time, smartest thing you ever did, you don't have to do your hair.
Yeah.
You know, she's like, wish I'd have done that. But yeah, no, it does pigeonhole, honestly, to me, now that everybody's wearing these Western hats with whatever goes from the neck down.
Sure.
But I always felt like, you know, that the upstairs had to, you know, match the downstairs a little bit. So it kind of limited also what I felt I could wear, you know, for the rest of the stuff. But it sets me apart and I'm grateful for it. In fact, so much so that I think there have been people that actually don't know my name, but if somebody says, oh, she's the girl that wears the cowboy hat. Oh, that's who sings that song.
Oh, it's for sure. I mean,
yeah.
I know you're still, I could identify you by your silhouette, which is a compliment.
Thank you.
And that it is like the terror, it's just, you were in the driveway and you're in your hat. It was, and I just saw your shadow and I was like, holy crap, there she is coming through. Anyway, that was just me. That's not even a real thing.
Well, thank you.
We'll keep
that's
this
a
in.
Compliment. Thank
but,
you.
Did you do the typical Nashville get in the car and drive down and move down, like from Alberta? Did you pack up a car or?
Yeah.
How far is that drive?
Well, from Alberta to Nashville is probably in the 2,000 plus mile range. But I had gone to live with my grandparents in Ontario for about 6 months before I moved to Nashville. Long story there. But I ended up, my mom flew from Alberta to Ontario, and one of her very best friends who had known me since I was a little baby, basically we all decided it was just time for me to go to Nashville. I had been waiting on a legal way to move here. I didn't have a green card.
A lot of people didn't wait for that part of it. They did it the non-super legal way.
Well, I did it the non-super legal way. And we just said, you know what? I was 18 years old and I was getting depressed because this was my destiny and I had to be here. And so moved in a Honda Civic with a guitar in the back seat and everything I owned. And man, the days of life being so simple that everything you own can fit in the back seat of a car. Sometimes I miss that simplicity in life. But we crossed the border, the border agent's looking in the back seat. He sees these two women with this teenager in the back and he's like, where are you ladies headed?
Who was with you?
My mom, Linda, and her friend, Pat. Pat was driving.
Pat's a solid friend then.
She's solid until we found out she had pot in the car after we got across the border.
You know
but that's
what?
A whole other story.
Oh, my gosh. Could have derailed the whole thing.
I don't think I've told anybody that yet, but I don't think Pat would care. It's legal in Canada now. Anyway, so we crossed the border, and the border agent's looking in the back seat at the guitar, and we're thinking we're going to be in trouble because we know we have no intention of actually bringing me back to Canada. We're just leaving me there.
But you don't say that, right?
Going shopping. Totally shopping. Just for
with your guitar.
Totally.
Just to play songs while you
shopping,
buy turtlenecks.
Well, he said, where are you going? And so Pat's like, the Grand Ole Opry. We're gonna go see the Grand Ole Opry. So they thought that these three broads are on the way to Nashville to do the Nashville touristy thing with the guitar. He didn't know that there were only two coming back. So
when you're moving down, is it You're such a teenager, right? You're 18 mm-hmm. or 19 years old. And where did you learn about Nashville? Was it the Opry? But for me, I live closer. I'm from Arkansas. So it wasn't that Nashville was thousands of miles away or 500 miles, depending on where you're coming from. It was the state next door. But I really learned about it through watching TNN.
Yes.
Mostly, right?
A lot of that.
And watching the Opry when it was on then, but the Opry would move around a lot too. My grandma was a big country music fan. How did you learn about it and know that you wanted to come here?
Well, my grandparents on my mom's side were professional country music musicians. They played in local bands around Montreal, where I was born. And they had pretty much quit by the time I came around. They were always had guitars laying around the house. So I got a lot of it from them. And they were listening to. My mom taught me guitar. She played. She liked kind of more in the folk scene. But I became absolutely obsessed with it when the Barbara Mandrell show came on. And I started to really do the deep dive and go into that rabbit hole. And then I discovered Ricky Skaggs, I Was in Heartache's record, and Reba McEntire. And then I went and got into all the Patsy Cline and Loretta Lynn and the Judds. Oh, geez, the Judds. I can't even tell you. Just obsessed with the Judds. So I was really, really into it. And Crook and Chase used to have This Week in Country Music was a show.
The TV show, right?
Yes, the TV show.
I used to watch it too.
It aired at, oh my gosh, you don't look old enough to remember that show.
I'm 61.
You're aging very well.
Thank you.
Yeah. Crook and Chase, This Week in Country Music, you're familiar with. I'm grateful that you know what I'm talking about because a lot of people don't. But it aired through the American affiliate in Medicine Hat, Alberta, where I grew up at like 2:30 in the morning. And I would set my alarm, and I was in school in junior high, and I'd set my alarm to wake me up at 2:25 so I could watch the little black and white TV downstairs. I had a basement bedroom, and I would go sit by that little black and white TV and watch that show.
Really?
And then I'd go back to sleep. The days where I could just go back to sleep.
Same.
I miss those days, right?
I used to do that with David Letterman at midnight. I'd wake up, watch Letterman. Didn't even really get it. I was like 8, but I was like, that guy looks kind of awkward, and he's funny like me. And if he can do it, I can do it. But I wouldn't really get it.
Yeah.
But I knew that that was kind of what I wanted to do. And then I would just go back to sleep.
I think there's a thing that, like, in your brain, you wake yourself up to watch something that is helping shape who you're going to be and what you're going to do. Then you go back to sleep. I wonder if that just has some sort of, it sinks in like a sponge into your subconscious, like in a different way. Doing something, I don't know. I've never thought of it that way, but maybe we both kind of, it got more ingrained or something.
Did you, because when I finally met Crook and Chase, and I've now met him a few times, but I had him and I did this with him for an hour. Is really one of the coolest experiences.
Oh yeah, they're great.
Great, and you know, people that I looked up to when I was a kid, still today, those are the coolest people to meet, mm-hmm. because a lot of my peers now, they've made it and they're famous and they're rich and yeah, you know, and you start to see, it's just a game, mm-hmm. right? Like you got to get lucky, you got to have a skill. You do something that's oddly celebrated, like you've been lucky enough to do something that's oddly celebrated by our culture when it probably should be like brain science, but instead it's, but this, like Mark Chestnut came into my studio one day and I was like, oh my God, or Crook and Chase were in my house. And I was like, this is the craziest thing ever. Like that to me was like a humongous deal to have them when you were finally able to meet them. I would imagine because that was your taste of American country music in such a way. Like, was that super cool?
I still get goofy around people like Crook and Chase, Winona, Reba, Ricky Skaggs, like all those. I don't know. It's just when you're forming.
Yeah, maybe that's it. You're forming.
It's just they become part of your DNA almost. Mm-hmm. And so then it's like there's a reverence for those people that you don't necessarily have for the more modern day. And it's nothing to be old curmudgeonly about. It's
sure.
just that's your touchstone. That's your
It's more romantic then.
It is.
When I was 12, things were larger than life, mm-hmm. and it motivated me to make big steps into what I wanted. Now it's like, I'll just use Luke as an example. Luke Bryan, okay, drop off a casserole? Who cares? I worked with Luke for like 4 years every day on Idol. You know
what are you talking about, Bobby?
Yes, and he's like the best. But it's like that's just my friend.
Yeah.
But like Crook and Chase.
Yeah.
That was really one of those for me that when they came over and I was able to just spend an hour with them, and I would tell them, I remember when you guys, you know, I did a lot of I remember when and didn't ask a question.
Well, because you're a fan. Like it's it helped shape who you became. And everything that you are now and that you've achieved is you have to find inspiration. There are people that you're inspiring right now doing what you do that are going to be doing the same thing.
Don't do it. Do not do this. Like Ralph Emery.
I was going to ask you, have you met Ralph Emery?
No, I've never met him. I watched him constantly.
Yeah,
though.
Me too. I love TNN, the Nashville network.
Yeah.
Was also, I can see both of us like very, very influential and very integral in information gathering. Mm-hmm. Like it was.
As a culture that I knew, I listened to the radio and I would hear, but until you could see it with your eye, you could see the people come on his show.
Mm-hmm.
You could see what Nashville, it was really the first. It really made Nashville like three-dimensional to me. And my grandma was such a country music fan that made me, but Ralph Emery was like the Letterman, but the Nashville
totally.
Letterman.
Yeah. And you know, I find that when TNN went away, I got to actually do that show before it all went away. That's how old my career is at this point, but I got to do that show. And there was a span of time between TNN and when country became so hot now that it's a given. Everybody's getting the late night shows and everybody's getting the big network looks and all of that kind of stuff. Whereas there was a span of time where TNN wasn't there. And there was a span of time where country acts were kind of going into the abyss with as far as television and media and exposure goes, because we were missing that element and that entity that TNN gave us back then. And it's only been, I think, you know, in my mind, the last 10 years or so that country's become such a driving format.
Sure.
And everything that country acts are getting on all the stuff, where it was such a hard sell for so long to get a David Letterman or to get the Tonight Show if you were a country act. And now everybody's on them.
When you moved to town, did you take a job at first selling Western wear, or did you start playing like Tootsies? Or like, what was the?
I couldn't get a job.
What was the order of how you made a living?
Well, one needs a social security number and a green card to get a job, and true. I did not have either of those things, nor a car.
But you have one though now, so we can air this, right?
I do.
Okay, just
now,
making sure.
Yeah. No, I moved down, and my mom. I had a little brother who was 5 years old. My mom could only come down to help me get set up. We had to find an apartment. We had to find a living situation. We had to find a cash paying job for me because I couldn't get work
legally.
So it was, and then she had to leave. So it was a lot of very fast, you know, and this is before the internet. I mean, we were looking at classified ads in the newspaper to try and find a room for rent. Found a situation with this woman who was working a shift at a factory. She was separated from her husband at that time. There's more to that story. But I rented a room from her at a place in Tusculum, which is Bell Road and...
I still use GPS here, so...
Right, it's Antioch, basically. So I rented a room from her in exchange for a break in the rent. I would look after her two-year-old son when she worked the graveyard shift at the factory. So I had a bus pass. We found that situation, and then before my mom and Pat left, we got me a bus pass because I didn't have a car, so I had to take, you know, Nashville Transit. And we went to Tootsie's Orchid Lounge. We went to the Grand Ole Opry and saw the Opry, which was awesome, of course. We went to Tootsie's Orchid Lounge, did the Lower Broadway thing. Half of it was boarded up. There were people sleeping in the streets.
It's before they made Nashville downtown functioning again, right? Like in
even functioning. It was Skid Row.
Yeah.
The cops were everywhere. There were hookers. There was drug deals going down. There was blood on the sidewalks. It was dangerous. And the only people who went into Tootsie's were usually the Greyhound buses full of the elderly folks that were on tours and stuff, and they would go in the midday.
Who didn't know any better.
Right. They would have a tour, you know.
Yeah.
This is Tootsie's Orchid Lounge, and there's the Ryman, and then they breeze through there for 30 minutes and leave. But it was dangerous, and so my mom and Pat and I had to see it. We went down during the day, and we went in, and because I was this country music historian. I was reading all the books, and I'd seen Tootsie's and Coal Miner's Daughter, you know, all the scenes mm-hmm. with everybody hanging out there. So we went in, and there was a guy singing. Of course, my mom and Pat are like, ask him if you can sing, and they're trying to get me up there to sing. The place is completely empty. It's 1,000 degrees in there, which I'm not used to at all. I'm still not.
And not large, by the way. For the people just listening, they don't know.
It's very small.
Yeah, it's tight. It's like a trailer, but a bar, like the size of that. Yeah. It's like a shotgun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Doors open. Anyway, I get up and this guy's name was Bo. He let me take the guitar and he was glad to let someone take over his shift. So I started singing, and slowly but surely the place starts, you know, people start filtering in, and all of a sudden it's full. And the owner, who was Robert at the time, who became Robert's Western World next door, he owned Tootsie's at that time, and he said to the music director who was starting his next shift, he said, see if you can hire her. So My mom and Pat and I are sitting
right
there.
From right there.
Yeah. So they offered me a job playing for $15 a day, plus whatever tips I made. And all these little local yokel guys, you know, that were musicians trying to make it in town. And there was all of this, I'll make you a star, kid. It was just, it was that kind
was
of
it grimy?
Character. Grimy.
Yeah.
Character. These characters that could have been in a movie somewhere. They're living in their cars and in the alley and telling me they're going to help me make it big. And one of them came up to my mom and said, ma'am, whatever you do, don't let her play down here at night. You'll find her dead in the dumpster.
Wow.
Oh, God. You
and
tell
now your mom's got to go back to
right.
Canada, leave her teenage daughter.
Exactly.
What?
So Pat, my mom's friend Pat, who drove us down, kind of convinced my mother that we needed to get me to Nashville because she had seen me and she's like, Terry's depressed. She needs to be following her. You got her now. Let's take her now. Get on a plane. She did not speak to Pat all the way back to Nashville. Like, it was a 2-day silent drive because she was scared absolutely shitless. Can I say that?
You can say it.
She was scared shitless, yeah. Like terrified that something was going to happen. So
yeah, that's not what you want to hear.
It was awkward. Yeah. So I promised her I would not play Lower Broadway at night. Can you imagine me standing at a bus stop at midnight trying to get back to 10 miles down there? It took an hour and 20 minutes one way to get down to Tootsie's from where I was living because it stops every 5 seconds. So I wasn't allowed to play down there at night. And there was an odd time that they asked me to take a night shift because somebody didn't show up. And I didn't tell her. I said, I can only do this if somebody drives me and drops me off at home. Like, you have to come get me. So
did they?
They did. Yeah. The bouncer would come get me. I can't remember his name. Very nice man.
Hang tight. The Bobbycast will be right back.
This festival and concert season will be all about the boots. And Tecovas is your next stop before attending your next concert. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring. You're talking about men's boots, women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition, timeless style, always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort, little to no break-in period. Like, it's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Plus, direct consumer pricing keeps the value on your feet, the money in your pocket. So stop by your local Tecovas store. Have a complimentary drink. Shop the new styles. You like the smell of leather or no?
I love it.
Yeah. That's what the whole store basically is. Fresh leather.
Yep.
Friendly staff. Or like the smell of staff?
I don't know. I'm sure they smell good there.
Many stores have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. What a gift, too. Regular live music and events. There is no in-store experience like this. If you can't make it to a store, just visit tecovas.com.
TECOVAS.com. TECOVAS.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tecovas.com. Find your new favorite pair of boots today. This is the year to stop overpaying for your family plan. So choose a Straight Talk Wireless family plan. Unlimited data, talk, and text on a reliable 5G network. And you can get a new line starting at $25 per line per month for 4 lines, plus taxes and fees and no contracts. That's good decision making. Available at Walmart and on straighttalk.com. Family plan discount with 4 lines, all on the Silver Unlimited plan. Not combinable with auto pay discount. In times of traffic, your data may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Video streams at up to 480p.
Mother's Day is coming, and mom doesn't want flowers. She wants a cocktail. Here's a hint. Get mom Bartesian. It's the countertop cocktail maker that creates your choice of over 60 premium cocktails in less than 30 seconds, each at the touch of a button. Flowers die. Happy hour comes back every day. So get mom the machine that makes amazing cocktails with real fruit juices and craft bitters. Best of all, get $50 off a Bartesian premium cocktail maker with the purchase of 1 pack of cocktail capsules. So, instead of getting mom a reason to fill a flower vase with water, get mom the easiest, fastest way to fill her glass with the floral notes of gin. The best cocktails are premium cocktails, and the best day to get it for mom is Mother's Day, because you can get $50 off now for a limited time. Visit bartesian.com/mother to get the best premium cocktail maker for mom at the best price for you. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
And we're back on the Bobbycast.
How long a shift did you play?
4 hours. And I would take, you know, I would take a break every hour for 10 minutes or something.
Did you feel like that was such an integral part of your musical journey in that you had to play 4 hours,
yeah,
even if it's covers? You know, you'd read about
I think the famous example is the Beatles when they were playing in like Hamburg, Germany, and they played for 7 hours a night. And they were like, listen, all the things that we did, where we really became the artist that we are was having to grind out 7 hours.
Sure.
Because we're having to play covers. We're having to quickly learn.
Yeah.
Doing that for 4 hours, did you just learn how to be a bit more improvisational?
Yes, and because I was solo. Like, this is just me and a guitar.
Right.
This was, but Tootsie's didn't have a lot of bands back then. It was all solo artists. A, they didn't want to pay for a band. And it wasn't this big, loud party scene that it is now. It was a lot of tourists coming in, but you know, country didn't have the young college crowd like they do now. So it was, and the guy who let me sit in on his set, it was just him and his guitar. So I would sit, and I get a lot of requests for Patsy Cline and Loretta Lynn and whatever was hot on the radio at the time. And I was playing Tennessee Flat Top Box, the Roseanne Cash version, and Randy Travis. This is before Alan Jackson or Garth or Clint or sure. any of that. So it was very much the Judds and the early Reba stuff and classic country.
Did you kind of know what people were going to request? Like, because even though they were different people, usually it was the same group of songs.
Right. And I had sat, you know, in my kitchen and in my bedroom in Alberta playing everybody's songs so much and learning so much. I was prepared. I had a plastic binder just full of lyrics and songs that I had been already singing. So I pretty much had a pretty good handle on it when I got that job.
When did you start creating instead of playing and performing? Because you're here and now it's time to be your own.
Mm-hmm.
When did that start?
I was starting that back in Alberta. I was
really,
you know, dabbling in songwriting. I mean, and of course it doesn't have the creative community that Nashville does. So I was writing by myself and, you know, essentially. So I was I wrote a couple of decent songs when I was a teenager, and then when I got to Nashville, I hooked up with a guy named Woody Bowles, who was a manager. He was one of the Judd's first managers with Ken Stiltz, and he heard me sing, and he kind of directed me towards a couple of publishers that helped me put me with some co-writers and stuff and helped groom me as a songwriter a little bit. And I wrote a few songs that were actually wound up on my first album for Mercury from that time. And I had gotten married, and I was able to actually, I got my green card, and I was able to actually start working real jobs. And I worked at Applebee's over at I-24 and whatever that road is over there. I'm all turned around. Nashville's changed so much, I don't know where I am half the time. So I worked at Applebee's and bartended and had day jobs and worked at a boot store for a while. And he and I just kind of were trying to eke out a living. And I would go after my waitressing shift, and I'd go down to Music Row in my car I now had a car, blew smoke everywhere, but I had a car, and go down, and I would write until about 10 o'clock at night. So I'd go wait tables during the day, and then I'd go down to Music Row and do some writing and co-writing, and wouldn't get home sometimes till 10 or 11 o'clock.
So if you're playing anywhere, like you're doing covers or wherever you do your Tootsies, or so you're doing that, were you writing at the same time? Because again, it's two versions of music, right? You're having to learn songs from other people so you can pay your rent if you don't get to watch the two-year-old or whatever, however old the kid is now, three or four. But then at the same time, you have to go and then you have to write.
Yeah.
And again, different muscle.
Yeah.
They're very close to each other. But were you able to do that? Were you able to play and do a bunch of covers to make a living and then write at the same time? Or did you have to separate them a bit?
Oh, absolutely. And because a lot of the covers and a lot of the artists I were covering were inspiring what I was writing, because they were influencing me in that music. And I kind of found my wheelhouse there and what kind of things I wanted to say and musical range and melodies that really resonated with me. I'm not saying, you know, we all copy a little bit from this and that, but I call it more like finding inspiration. So there were two minds, but I would throw some original stuff in the Tootsie set from time to time.
Would they like you to do that, or were they like, just play the hits, kid?
No, they liked it, because I would also set it up and I wrote this song, you know. Yeah. And I'm an 18-year-old drinking Diet Coke because I'm not supposed to be drinking, and you know, it was in a way that they also, I think, were enamored by this kid sitting down on Skid Row with a guitar. And I had a lot of protectors and people also, you know, kind of looking out for me that would sit down there. And this one guy, his name was Sir Lawrence, was his nickname, and he's passed on recently. But he was this great big tattooed guy with an 8-ball tattooed on the top of his head, and he looked like he would just rip you apart. He came in one day and he was sitting at the bar and he was like one of very few people there, and I'm singing right to him, and he's just got, I started singing Patsy Cline and he just started bawling and tears are rolling down his face. And he just became, he was a fan and he became a protector. And he said, you need to go and be singing at Gillies up on Music Row. There was a Gillies up on Music Row where all the statue of all the naked people are is right there on that corner. And they had a beer garden and they had people singing for tips in there. So he had me go meet the owner of that, the music guy of that place. So I went and played up there for a while too. My very first set playing.
He
made that introduction. He used to drive me. He started taking me home so I wouldn't have to take the bus here and there, because he had a car or a van that he was actually living in. He would drive me home in the van.
Wow.
I know. And
like awesome and also wow at the same time.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
it was, I could, yeah. There were characters at Gillies, and they had an actual parking lot there. So a lot of their entertainers were also living in the parking lot in their cars and stuff. Elvis impersonators. Like, I'm not kidding you, Bobby. There's just one guy. Yeah, his name was Sonny, and he sounded exactly like Elvis, but swore that was his voice. This is me,
oh,
man.
Oh, he
this
said
is me,
he,
man.
Well,
no, it,
that wasn't an effective voice. That's how he really talked.
No, he said he was trying to be Elvis.
Yeah, but I'm saying he was like saying that was really him.
He was trying to make like that was really him. And so my first gig there at Gillies, I went to try it out, and they only paid me $7 a day. But they swore the tips would be better, which they were not.
So you made half the money and the tips weren't as good.
But I just thought I'd try a different experience. Sure. And my first day there, this guy comes in and I'm in the middle of a Patsy Cline song. And he drops dead of a heart attack right in the middle of me singing. Like just...
like physically you saw him go down.
Yes, he just... and I just kept going. I didn't know what happened. I'm 18. I'm like, the show must go on, right? And... the song ends and the ambulances show up, and I'm like, anytime anybody says, just go out there and kill him, I'm like, you really shouldn't tell me that. Actually happened one time. It's not funny, but it was just the experiences during that time. You couldn't make this shit up that was going on. And the town was so different. There was a spaghetti deli upstairs above a wax museum.
It's weird to hear you talk about that. Back in the day, because you're like... and I hope this is a compliment to you. You're like legendary, but you're not old. It's like a weird.
Thank you.
You're like this weird, because you're like back in the 1800s in Nashville, and it's like you can't. You don't even look old. People admire you, and obviously with this duets project, you got to ask people to sing with you, and I'm sure people were just sprinting toward it because you know you're so revered in this community, but also you're not 100. It's crazy to hear you talk about old Nashville, but it makes sense if you were 18.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Because you were doing that when times were completely different here, but you were a kid, too.
Yeah.
That would be crazy for your mom.
I go to Music Row now, and I stand there, and I look around, and I'm like, this just isn't even... if you were to take 18-year-old me and stick me down on Demumbrian right now and take the bag off my head and say, look around and tell me where you are, I wouldn't be able to tell you where I was.
What do you like about 18-year-old you?
Oh, the hunger, the passion, the creative sponge that I was, the drive. And I still have that, but it's never the same as it is when you're just that determination that I just want a chance to show people what I can do.
Why do you think you were so passionate about it? Who were you trying to, and maybe impress isn't the word, who were you trying to make proud? Was it yourself? Was it somebody back home? Like, who was it
really
for you?
Good question. Nobody's ever asked me that.
Because that hunger just doesn't come out of thin air, right?
It doesn't. I moved around a lot as a kid, and I had a challenging relationship with my stepfather, not a super close relationship with my biological father. I mean, we're fine and everything, but I had some tougher times growing up, and I think music was that one thing that anchored me in a way and gave me that security and that confidence that I didn't have anywhere else. And I became so obsessed with it, and there was also a burning desire, I'll show you, kind of thing.
Yeah, no, I don't know my real dad. I met him once a few years ago, so I definitely understand that, because that was a driver for me, too. Mm-hmm. It was like, wait, I'll show you why you really missed out on not being my dad. Like that was a part of it for me too.
I think a lot of us have something driving us other than just a love for what we do that sparks that, that starts that fire.
Yeah, I would agree. The consistency that, you know, you said music was just there. You know, whenever you have a really inconsistent life, childhood, like I did, like you did, mm-hmm. when you do have that one or two things, like my grandma was so consistent with me. When she was with, my grandma adopted me for a while too, when, you know, my mom was gone, I know my dad was. But anything that had consistency, like, I still hold on to. Like, I'm the biggest Arkansas Razorback sports fan, but it's because I knew every Saturday, it didn't matter where I was living, there was going to be a game. And I could look forward to it. It was going to be on free. It's on free television. So that was consistent for me. There was music that was consistent for me because my life was not, there was no consistency about it at all. And so that's why today I still like hold on to those things. It's even like the people we were talking about a minute ago that we felt like were famous when we were kids. Why we still feel like it's so cool.
There's a comfort in the consistency of something like that. And I said earlier in another situation something that really kind of struck me because you know, your career ebbs and flows and you have ups and downs and you have self-doubt. And even with success comes that, well, I'm not the top of everybody's mind anymore. And you have to, you know, with that comes a little of that, you know, and you have to kind of navigate that emotionally. And it's not as easy as people would think it is. But, you know, and I think a lot of artists go through this period of, do I matter enough to keep doing this anymore?
Oh, for sure. I deal with relevancy issues.
Relevancy, yes.
Constantly.
We could have a whole therapy session today.
I live in relevancy land where it's like,
me too.
I'm not relevant anymore. This is
totally.
Yeah.
100%.
How do you deal with that?
I'll tell you how I deal with that. This year, it was an epiphany that came to me, and I started thinking back, and I started going way back and remembering that hunger, that kid that woke up to watch This Week in Country Music and sat for hours and hours in her bedroom singing and learning new songs, dreaming about Nashville, crying because she wanted to just be in Nashville, just wanted a shot, wanted to be on the radio so bad I could taste it. And I'm like, I can't give up on that kid. I would feel like I was betraying her if I just did that.
What's wild about you saying this is that me, 10,000 feet up looking at you and your career, I would see you and go, man, everybody loves her. Massive success. You would just think, but I think this is common, right? Like, around the room with whomever, I would just think, that's the one person that doesn't deal with imposter syndrome or relevancy. And, but it just shows you it almost doesn't matter. It's like the screw loose that got us here is still the screw loose now that affects us in a slightly different way.
And I think the danger zone to that is playing the comparison game too.
Big time, because you can never win.
Because relevancy is only relevant compared to who's doing something
sure.
more.
Yes.
Like, and there's always going to be somebody doing something more, getting more opportunities than you're getting, or being recognized more than you are. And, you know, sometimes you feel like you're spinning your wheels because you're working your ass off and you're just like, does anybody care?
Right. Does anybody care at all? Will they ever care again?
And then if you express that to somebody, they're like,
they don't understand.
Listen, how could you? It's just, it's part of being human. It's that affliction, the human affliction.
And even as a creative, it's, you know, if I have friends at work, and most of my friends aren't creatives, which I think is a big deal. It's good for me because they can kind of give me a bit of a realistic view on what's really important in life. Mm-hmm. And, you know, with those, I can't really go, well, here's the thing. Here's why I'm upset. You know, this show, the stand-up show I did, you know, I did announce a tour of 12 shows and it only sold 80%. And they're like, how is that upsetting to you? And I'm like, well, you don't understand. Like, last time I sold out every theater.
Yeah.
And now I'm and so at the same, as trivial as it is, you'd still like to have someone that can relate to it and go, I get it. Same, but instead of just but,
yeah,
you know, because a lot of my friends are in the industry, like, why are you whining? You're theaters are almost sold. And it's like, no, you don't understand. Like, I deal big time with imposter syndrome. But when I do, I finally have a couple friends too now in the industry. One of my closest friends is a guy named Ben Rector. Do you know who Ben is?
Can I tell him this?
Is he doing your project?
Yeah.
He'll be over in like 30 minutes. I mean, in like 30.
But we can't really get into the project too much.
Well,
but
I know it.
I can't pretend I don't know him.
It's all embargoed. Ben is one of my best friends. We work out here at the house three times a week. But is absolutely, and I think I get anxious. We have like an anxious three. We could be like a wrestling, me, Brett Eldridge, and Ben Rector.
I can see you all being friends.
Oh, yeah. We just call, like if it's on like ticket, a release day or something, it's like, you doing all right, man? I don't know, man. I'm watching, it's they go on sale in 6 minutes. Don't watch live. Just check back in at night. Don't worry about it. But we all have, to have those friends that can relate.
It's really important.
Yes. And it's also important to have friends that can't relate at all. And there's got to be a balance.
Like there has to be.
My wife, not in the business. That is what, to me, helped the, hey, am I still relevant? Because she just doesn't care in the best way. And it drives me crazy sometimes, too. Because I'm like, don't you care? And she's like, I know you care, so I care. But that's not that important. Like, you're doing what you love. It's going to be, sometimes it's going to be great. Sometimes it's not going to be great. You're just going to keep going. And so that's very valuable too. Who is that for you?
Oh gosh. I have friends that I have had my entire life since I was 12.
From home.
Yeah, from home. And we're still very, very close. And then I have a few friends that I made in Nashville right after I moved here, like in 1990, who are also my other very best friends. None of them are in the business.
The originals too.
Yeah. I went to school with them. They have businesses, they're school teachers, they're social workers.
It's important.
It's very important. And then I have the Pam Tillis, the Susie Bogus,
the
Reba and Trisha. Yeah. We all get together and we can kind of bounce these insecurities off of each other. More so me, I think. But I look to them, especially like Reba and Susie, I would say, because I look to them like big sisters who have been through it all. And it doesn't matter how big the star is. Everybody has had their moments, I think, where they've experienced something that they can go, hey, you know, and I can go, what did you do in this instance? Or like you got to have some of that too. But I think the balance is, I'm glad you have that too.
I live that.
You have your history friends that have nothing to do with any of it. And then you have the people who have been there who can help you kind of navigate the complicated emotional waters that we live in.
Yeah, or just like swim beside me, even if it's not navigated.
Yeah.
Because there are times where Ben's like, I don't know either. And we're just like, okay, well, we don't know together.
Yeah.
You know, because it is, it's a weird, to get into a business where you are going to make a living creating something that you think is good enough for people to pay their money to watch. Because at the same time, you could be the most humble person, but if you don't have a bit of confidence, even an ego about and it is a weird juxtaposition of, at times I have no confidence at all. And at the same time, I have all the confidence in the world to create something, to do a stage show, to do a radio show, and expect people to give me their time and money for what I'm creating.
The most complicated part about it is it's all up here.
Yeah.
Like, and that sometimes will be the one factor that defines whether you go out there and kill it or don't. Because it's all in your mind.
You ever get sad at seats that weren't sold?
Oh, yeah, of course. I think everybody does.
Yeah.
And I got to tell you, every single night I walk out there, it's not a given in my brain that there's going to be anybody out there.
Same,
I swear to God, it's that.
Which is crazy for me to hear you say that, by the way. It's crazy for me to hear you say that.
But it's true.
Not even saying it's not true, but it's crazy for me to hear that because, again, I see you, 10 o'clock. I mean, that's my perception
of
you. Terry Clark. But but in reality, you're Terry.
Yeah, and I have all the same insecurities and that anybody has. I find that hard to believe that you have that. I mean, I walked in into your drove into your house today. I'm like, damn, Bobby Bones is Bobby Bones.
Well, mine's like secret though, you know? People don't know. Mine's
well,
like,
they do now.
Well, mine's like, yeah. Well, they know from this, but it's like, yeah, I think we had to have something a little off for us to pursue a career in an industry where we want people to pay us for what we're creating with our minds. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't mean that that something off doesn't also like kick us at the same time.
Do you feel like the confidence was greater when you were younger and you were going after it than it is after you've gotten it when you start the questioning yourself constantly, because then you're, is there a shift that happens?
I think I was naive. I think I was brave. I had nothing to lose, and I was naive because I didn't know good or bad what was out there. Mm-hmm. I just knew I wanted it. And I knew I didn't want to be where I was, too. That was a big part of it, right? I didn't want to, wasn't the greatest where I come from. And so I had big dreams. And, you know, if I had known everything, would I have still? I don't know. I think so, but I don't know.
Yeah. It was simplified.
Yeah.
It was cooked down into this.
Mm-hmm.
And you didn't overthink anything.
I just wanted to get out of that situation. I knew I could work harder than everybody else. I don't and didn't think I was the most talented, but I knew that I could probably strategize as good as anybody else. Mm-hmm. I had strategies to live for a lot of growing up. But I do think that the more success I had, the higher my therapy bills got.
Totally.
Because I started really questioning, do I deserve it? What am I doing? I have imposter syndrome like crazy. Yeah. Can I repeat? Then you're like, well, I don't want to not try as hard in fear of losing it. But then I start to question, well, why am I not going as hard? Because I'm going to lose it? Well, then I will lose it. So, yeah, it's that cycle.
When am I getting thrown out of the club? When are they going to find out?
For sure. I feel like I've been robbing 7-Elevens for 20 years, and they haven't caught me yet, and I'm on the run. That's what it feels like.
Oh, man. Well, it's thank you for being so vulnerable. I didn't know that about you. I just always assumed that you were just...
Look like a model, built like a bodybuilder.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get that a lot.
Brick shit house.
Yeah, exactly. That's it.
The Bobbycast. We'll be right back.
This festival and concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your next stop before attending your next concert. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring. You're talking about men's boots, women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition, timeless style, always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort, little to no break-in period. Like, it's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Plus, direct-to-consumer pricing keeps the value on your feet, the money in your pocket. So stop by your local Tecovas store. Have a complimentary drink. Shop the new styles. You like the smell of leather or no?
I love it.
Yeah. That's what the whole store basically is. Fresh leather.
Yep.
Friendly staff. Or like the smell of staff?
I don't know. I'm sure they smell good there.
Many stores have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. What a gift, too. Regular live music and events. There is no in-store experience like this. If you can't make it to a store, just visit tecovas.com.
TECOVAS.com.
TECOVAS. Yeah.
Yeah.
Tecovas.com. Find your new favorite pair of boots today. This is the year to stop overpaying for your family plan. So choose a Straight Talk Wireless family plan. Unlimited data, talk, and text on a reliable 5G network. And you can get a new line starting at $25 per line per month for 4 lines, plus taxes and fees and no contracts. That's good decision making. Available at Walmart and on straighttalk.com. Family plan discount with 4 lines, all on the Silver Unlimited plan. Not combinable with auto pay discount. In times of traffic, your data may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Video streams at up to 480p.
Mom met a lot of your demands over the years. This Mother's Day, get her the Bartesian cocktail maker that makes premium cocktails on demand. In just 30 seconds, have your choice of over 60 premium or seasonal cocktails, all at the touch of a button. Get $50 off on the Bartesian cocktail maker now when you buy 1 pack of cocktail capsules. So, for all the times you made a mess, get Mom the countertop cocktail system that makes premium cocktails without making any mess at all. For all the times you begged for soda, get her premium cocktail capsules made with real fruit juice and craft bitters. For all the times you demanded tacos for dinner, get her the Bartesian that mixes margaritas in just 30 seconds. Make Mom's Mother's Day and all the 364 days that aren't Mother's Day with a Bartesian cocktail maker at $50 off. Visit bartesian.com/mother now to get $50 off the Bartesian Premium Cocktail Maker. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
This is the Bobbycast.
When did you not have to work service industry and you could just pay your bills by music?
Oh my goodness. you don't really start making real money until about a year after your first hit.
So I
wasn't waiting tables. But
a publishing deal? I had a publishing deal.
Yeah, I got a publishing deal with Sony Tree.
Were you able to quit working in all the other jobs? Or is your publishing deal just like partial of what you were making?
I made $350 a week from Sony Tree, and I was able to quit my waitressing job and focus on writing.
That's such a big deal. That's such a even if like you're making less money, it's still such a big deal.
Yeah, it was a big deal, and I think that was like 1993. It was about a year and a half, 2 years before I got my record deal, and I was writing and writing and writing a lot. I was going down to the firehouse, the fire hall there on Music Row next to Sony Publishing and writing every single day.
So how long until from when you moved here till you got a publishing deal?
About 6 years.
Wow, really?
Five to 6 years, yeah.
Did you ever doubt 2-3 years into it that maybe, man, you had this dream, but crap, it may not work out?
It took 8 years to get the record deal, so I was writing songs for a couple of years before that, but during that whole time, yeah, I was all of, 22, 23 going, well, if I don't get a record deal by the time I had this little deal I was making in my head. If I'm 28 and I don't have a deal yet, I'm going to go and become a dental hygienist because it's a trade and it's sensible and I'll make money doing that. But I don't know if I ever truly believed that because it was just a little game I was playing with myself because I'm Canadian. We're very frugal and very conservative about things and everything has to be very practical. Like, I can't just, I've got to have some kind of a career if this other career doesn't pan out. And as a kid, I was going to go into law enforcement.
Really?
Before I was going to come to Nashville and chase the dream. So I was starting to go back to that.
Like what specifically? Like a cop or like really?
RCMP.
I don't know what that is.
It's a Royal Canadian Mounted Police.
I do know what that is when you say
federal
that.
Federal police. Yeah, the ones on the
Mounties.
Horses, the Mounties.
The cartoons in the red.
Yes, like
the horses. Yeah, and they wear the red.
The cartoons,
Is that not it?
Blame Canada. No, that's them.
Okay. Yeah, the Mounties.
Yeah.
Why law enforcement? Was there anyone in your family?
No, I just wanted to. I wanted to make a difference in people's lives. I wanted to. I loved uniforms. I just suddenly look what I wear. Mm-hmm. I liked dressing up. So no, I wanted. I and also I wasn't super academically gifted. I had to work really hard to get B's and C's in school. Because we moved so much, I was moving to different schools all the time. It was hard for me to cut a groove in a school and really,
hard to get comfortable with people, much less
hard to get making new friends and then losing friends. And we just moved and we moved back and forth across the country a couple of times. And that part was difficult. But so academically, I think my grades suffered for that. And you have to have, decent grades to get into university and college and be able to do that. And I knew I probably wasn't going to get there. So I started, and I was passionate about it. I wanted to be a cop, and I thought it would be a great career, something I could do and retire and be able to retire at a decent age and have a good pension and all those sensible, practical things.
Very sensible, yeah.
Yeah. So, but that all went by the wayside. After Barbara Mandrell came on TV, I was like, okay.
That was really the flash for you. Like, you always loved it, but until when you saw the Barbara Mandrell show or Barbara Mandrell herself, that was what really told you, oh, I have to do this.
It started the wheels turning.
Yeah, that's how David Letterman was for me.
Yeah, it started that path. And then the deeper the rabbit hole got, I was just never coming out.
How many times did you watch Coal Miner's Daughter?
I've probably seen Coal Miner's Daughter upwards of 50 times.
Really? Have you met Sissy Spacek?
I've never. Oh, actually, I'm lying. I met Sissy Spacek at Mary Chapin Carpenter's wedding.
That's a whole.
I know, right? Dave Matthews was there too.
Wow.
I know. I just remembered that. I totally had forgotten about that. Yes, I did meet her. Boy, that was a surreal moment.
Did you tell her I watched you 50 times in Coal Miner's
Yes.
Daughter? Yeah.
Yeah, I did. I did. But I was still in shock because we almost died in a plane crash on the way to that wedding. We were stuck in. I flew with some people on this puddle jumper with props and Blake Chansey and I were like holding on to each other for dear life. It was bad weather. That was not a good flying experience. But it was a lovely wedding, and I got to meet Sissy Spacek.
Did you meet Dave?
I did, in the parking lot, yeah.
Did he say, oh, Terry, nice to meet you. Oh, so much to see, Terry.
He was very nice. Yeah. He didn't crash into me, but he was very nice.
Yeah. So I know it's still, again, we're not talking about a lot of it, but because they're telling me it's a lot of this is embargoed, whatever the heck that is.
We've already let the cat out of the bag a couple times,
we won't cat out of the whole bag, but again,
they're grimming me. The PR people are going, "You're a bad girl."
No, this is what I'll say then, and I'll also cut this if you'd like. When I mentioned earlier that people really look to you as inspiration, I think this unnamed project that may be happening is an example of that.
Thank you.
I do, because that wouldn't happen, or you wouldn't get yeses, or you wouldn't get. It just wouldn't happen if that wasn't the case.
That all is wonderful to hear. Thank you.
Do you believe it though when I say it?
I don't know that I ever believe it.
I know.
You know what I mean? Yeah. It's that.
Could you logically though, could you pull yourself out of you? And if, let's say it were me and I was like, hey, I'm doing this comedy, big comedy special. And I've got like this person who said he's going to do it with me and this, and she said she's going to do it. Could you see that they're only doing it because they find some value in doing it with me because they like what I do? Mm-hmm. Could you see that if it were me?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. That's all.
Definitely.
So that's what I see with this. I'm not even saying what it is.
Right.
But
and I hope we can actually come back and talk about
for sure.
that more.
Yeah.
Because this is, I love talking to you. I'm saying things I've never said to anybody. Like, what's with the vulnerability today? Oh my gosh.
Well, it's like Vegas.
It's retrospective.
You know how they pump oxygen in?
Right.
We have Xanax air. And it kind of takes you down a little bit.
Can I move
makes
in?
You loose. Yes. So you 6 years until you're publishing deal, and then a couple years after that until you got your record deal.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever get into the mindset of, I'm just going to be a writer? Because a lot of my friends start to think that. They're like, you know what? The artist thing's not going to work, but I have gotten pretty good at writing songs. And then later, their artist career does happen. But for a bit, they go, I think maybe I just write. Did you ever just settle, maybe I'll just be a writer? Or did you keep grinding toward that?
No. I really wanted to be an artist. I really wanted to sing for people and perform. And it wasn't as much about being a star as it was about connecting and performing and delivering these songs I was writing.
Why'd you like to perform?
It's a connection and it's an approval. It's an instant approval rating. Yeah. That goes back to that. I think that wanting to be loved and liked.
It's exactly what mine is.
Oh, that's self-esteem.
It's love. It was me trying to find love.
Mm-hmm.
Even being funny as a kid.
Yeah.
It was me trying to find love in a way, in a place that I couldn't.
Yeah. In a safe place. And if you're good, they're not going to throw eggs at you. You're going to find that love. And I knew I was good enough for that. But being a writer was never, I wasn't as passionate about writing as I am about performing. Writing for me has always been a vehicle to performing. I needed the songs to
sure.
go make the records to be able to go out. And I've always been a very project-oriented songwriter. I'm not somebody who just writes all the time.
Do you have a mentor here? Like when you moved to town that you could just call on your landline?
Mm. My mom was my mentor, I got to say. You know, she was my biggest champion. She was my inspiration. I was closer to her than any human.
Your mom still alive?
No, she passed away.
How long ago?
13 years ago. She was 60, and she died of a very, very rare form of cancer.
Oh, that sucks.
Just killed me. And that, thank you. That changed. I had to really sit down and take stock and like, what would my mom want me to do? Because I felt like I'd kind of lost half of this team that we were up until that point.
You mean after she had passed, you had to kind of
And I just went right back into doing what I do. I'm like, I'm honoring her by doing what we both sacrificed. She let her 18-year-old kid go to Nashville. Like the sleepless nights that woman must have had.
Oh man.
But you know, she didn't say you have to come home. I would call her, you know, collect. I'd call her a lot. And one time I got off at the wrong bus stop on my way back from Tootsie's, and it was blazing heat in the summer, and I was, you know, head to toe in cowgirl clothes and boots and standing there holding a guitar at the Hardee's at Harding Place and Nolensville Road. And I got off at the wrong stop and I kept waving the buses that would come by down. They wouldn't stop. There wasn't that. Finally one stopped and I said, I don't know where I am. And I was sweating and I was in tears. And he finally said, you have to wait three more buses and then this bus will come by, you know, and this, he's just opening the door and looking at me and I'm standing there with a guitar. And I got home from that and I said, I called her and I said, I don't know if I can do this. I was just absolutely hysterical and in tears. And she said, you can come home anytime you want to come home. But I just want you to think about when you're 50 years old and you remember coming home and not taking this shot, I want you to be okay with that decision. And I didn't go home. She was devil's advocate. She never told me I couldn't come home, but she also knew how badly I wanted it and that when a moment might have just been an emotional temporary thing.
Which was a very selfless thing for her because you know she'd have loved to have had you home.
Yeah.
Like that would have been the best thing in the whole world for you to be at home. Yet she still said, hey, think about this, because she knew what you wanted. You wanted to stay in Nashville.
Yeah.
And she didn't say, you should stay. She said, think of it. I mean, yeah, it sounds awesome. What was your mom like?
Oh, she was, my mom was very focused. When she made up her mind about something, she would just do it. Like, very focused, very determined, very strong, but also very kind and very sweet. Supportive, encouraging. She was my very biggest cheerleader, and when she died, I went right back to work pretty quick, and I think I needed to because I'm gonna keep pushing, and I'm just gonna do what I do, or I may never get up again, so I just kept pushing through.
Do you feel when my mom died? Because my mom was 46 or 47 when she died.
So sorry.
That's horrible. But you know, I also can sit here and talk with you about it from a place of empathy more than sympathy, which I would rather talk from a place of understanding, right? Because we get to relate. But I probably jumped back in way too quick. I don't think I allowed myself to mourn at all. Mm-hmm. And then I think over like the next 5 to 7 years, it kind of trickled out in weird ways, just like something would trigger it.
Did your mom get sick or did she die suddenly and unexpectedly?
My mom was a drug addict and she died just from years and years of like meth and substance abuse.
Did you have any idea it was going to take her life?
She had been in and out of rehab a bunch, but I mean, I never thought she would die, but she wasn't super healthy. Mm. I mean, she got pregnant at 15, so it wasn't like the easiest life for her. So I don't know that I was shocked, but yeah, I was surprised because it wasn't that she was super sick. I think it was just partial, like probably too much at that time. And then partially her body just not being able to hold on. But I remember I was working. I was on the air, and I got a call from my sister. Nobody ever calls me during the show because they know I'm pretty locked in and focused. And she was like, Mom's died. And I was like, wait, what? She said, yeah, Mom died. And I said, okay, let me call you back. And I just finished the show because I didn't know what to do. So I stayed for like 2 hours and just finished the show. And I told Amy, who's my co-host still to this day, those were all my same people 20 years ago. Wow. And I was like, hey, I'm going to keep going. But my mom died. And I remember Amy crying the whole time. And me, I didn't. Because the only thing I knew was to push.
You compartmentalized.
For sure. Had to learn it as a kid even. So it wasn't because I was strong or cool.
Yeah.
If anything, I kind of wish I could have felt. But, you know, did the funeral, arranged it, went right back to work. And then I could feel it like the next 7 or 8 years probably just trickling out of me where I wish I had taken a little time to mourn wholly. Mm-hmm. Where I don't know looking back that I made the right decision doing that. How quickly until you went back to work?
My mom died in April and I was back at work in June. And my brother, who works on oil rigs, he's an oil guy. He's younger. He was so young when she passed away. He was only 27. And he went to Brazil to work on an oil rig. And he processed more than any of us. He really mourned. And he had a very hard time with it. But my process was, you know, I mourned. We had things to arrange. Things had to, you know, I'm a distraction queen.
Same.
Like I just
did the same thing.
Yeah. Then went back to work and then I'm moving again and then I'm renovating another house. Then I'm making another album and then I'm back on the road again. Then I'm writing songs for this next album. And then I got to put that. It's been like, you know, I'm still wondering if I'm just going to absolutely fall apart one day because I just stayed so, you know, you keep pushing and stay so distracted, you know, with whatever it is, relationships or moving or projects. And, you know, do you ever, and I'm like, well, what does that look like if I just sit and go, I have to be sad about mom and just lose my shit here for, you know, God knows how long. And I did mourn, but some of my friends who've known me my whole life and my mom and knew my mom were like, we were actually thinking that this was going to take you down, like big time for a long time. And they've told me that they were actually surprised or I guess, I don't know what the word is, surprised that it didn't as much as I thought it would. But she was also very sick for 3 years and battling this thing.
Were you in Canada a lot while she was sick?
Yeah. I spent a lot of time flying back and forth. And I had bought a house near my parents that had bought a house on Vancouver Island so that they could retire there. And because it's just a beautiful place to be. And I bought a place just to be near them when they were growing old because I love my mom so much. And, you know, so I had a place there and I was able to be there quite a bit. Took quite a bit of time to go back and forth and be with her. But yeah.
My favorite part of this, my favorite story here is you being at that bus stop, calling your mom. Your mom would have loved to have had you home, but she loved you more than she would have loved having you home.
Yeah.
And she made you go, okay, think about this. It just would have been so easy for her to go, yeah, you need to come home.
Because believe me,
that would have been awesome for her to have her daughter home.
Right.
Who she loves more than anything in the whole world.
Yeah.
Yet she still was selfless enough to say, I don't think, in her own way, I don't think you should come home.
Right. To not want me to have any big regrets.
She made you get there yourself.
Yeah.
And you did.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Your mom sounds awesome.
Yeah. And there's been so many things that have happened that she should be there for. My brother got married. I burst into tears that night. I've had my moments. I had one the other day. Carly Simon album comes on and I'm chopping onions and it's not because of the onions. I'm just bawling and I'm like, oh, just moments where it just comes out of nowhere.
Small odd triggers still get me too. Mm-hmm. Like a random Home Depot commercial.
Yeah. And a song on the radio. Like it's.
Yeah. Canada is to me the nicest place in the whole world. And I'm on like 30 or something radio stations up there. And if I go, everybody's so nice that it feels like they're going to murder me. I'm not kidding. I was scared. The first time that I went into even Toronto, which is a massive city.
Oh, there are a lot of not nice people in Toronto, Bobby.
I hear you. That's why.
Have you been to the airport?
That's why. They held Mike in the airport. They held him for a few hours. But I think there was another Mike with his name that was like a killer or something.
Murderer. Yeah.
But that people were so kind that I was scared they were like setting me up for something. And I think that's just the nature.
I'm suspicious of your kindness.
Of Canadians. Where you grew up though, that was like West United States, right? Like above like.
Yes, above Montana. So I was born in Montreal, which is kind of like above New York. Mm-hmm. And then moved to Alberta, which was above Montana, and then moved back to above New York, and then moved back to Alberta. We zigzagged across the country a couple of times when I was younger, but I spent the majority of my formative years, I guess, from 9 years old to 18 in Alberta, in Calgary and Medicine Hat.
Medicine Hat's a cool name for a town.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I have a lot of friends and even family that live near Native Americans. And my wife's from Oklahoma, and so she's partially Native American too. And some of her friends back home have the coolest names, like Medicine Hat, John Medicine Hat.
Oh, all the towns up there. I mean, there's Moose Jaw, there's Medicine Hat, there's Pincher Creek, there's all kinds of Fort this and Fort that and Prince
the town
that
Regina makes me laugh out loud.
Well, you know what? The city that rhymes with fun, they call it.
I told people that's what was on a sign there, and nobody believed me.
Well, I don't know that I can even tell some of these stories on the air because I'm sure Regina gets so mad about it because it's just like, every time I play there, my band's American, my crew, everybody, it's the jokes leading up and leaving. I'm just like, okay, we got to get off this train. It's just, come on.
But
how many Regina jokes do you guys have in you? It never ends.
See that itself.
It's just funny, right? I know.
How many do I have in me?
Do you fly in and out of there very often?
I know. Yeah, no. It's, never see, is. I'm not even going to do it because it sounds pervy when I do it. When you do it, it's funny.
It does sound pervy. Yeah. Bobby Bones, the pervy guy.
Let's take a quick pause for a message from our sponsor.
This festival and concert season will be all about the boots. And Tecovas is your next stop before attending your next concert. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring. You're talking about men's boots, women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition, timeless style, always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort, little to no break-in period. Like, it's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Plus, direct-to-consumer pricing keeps the value on your feet, the money in your pocket. So stop by your local Tecovas store. Have a complimentary drink. Shop the new styles. You like the smell of leather or no?
I love it.
Yeah. That's what the whole store basically is. Fresh leather.
Yep.
Friendly staff. Or you like the smell of staff?
I don't know. I guess I'm sure they smell good there.
Many stores have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. What a gift, too. Regular live music and events. There is no in-store experience like this. If you can't make it to a store, just visit tecovas.com.
Tecovas.com. Tecovas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tecovas.com. Find your new favorite pair of boots today. This is the year to stop overpaying for your family plan. So choose a Straight Talk Wireless family plan. Unlimited data, talk, and text on a reliable 5G network. And you can get a new line starting at $25 per line per month for 4 lines, plus taxes and fees and no contracts. That's good decision making. Available at Walmart and on StraightTalk.com. Family plan discount with 4 lines, all on the Silver Unlimited plan. Not combinable with auto pay discount. In times of traffic, your data may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Video streams at up to 480p.
Mom met a lot of your demands over the years. This Mother's Day, get her the Bartesian cocktail maker that makes premium cocktails on demand. In just 30 seconds, have your choice of over 60 premium or seasonal cocktails, all at the touch of a button. Get $50 off on the Bartesian cocktail maker now when you buy 1 pack of cocktail capsules. So, for all the times you made a mess, get Mom the countertop cocktail system that makes premium cocktails without making any mess at all. For all the times you begged for soda, get her premium cocktail capsules made with real fruit juice and craft bitters. For all the times you demanded tacos for dinner, get her the Bartesian that mixes margaritas in just 30 seconds. Make Mom's Mother's Day and all the 364 days that aren't Mother's Day with a Bartesian cocktail maker at $50 off. Visit bartesian.com/mother now to get $50 off the Bartesian Premium Cocktail Maker. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
Welcome back to the Bobbycast.
20 years at the Opry.
Yeah, that's crazy.
That's awesome.
It is. It is awesome. And it's so funny because, Tricia Yearwood's celebrating 25 years this mm-hmm. year. Pam Tillis is celebrating 25 this year, and I'm celebrating 20. And, like, we're all Opry members and we're all friends. And it's bizarre that I get to have friends that are Opry members and that I'm celebrating an anniversary. I get to be an Opry member.
20 years as a member of the Opry. That's so cool.
I can't even believe I am an Opry member.
Did you know it was coming? Did you know they were going to invite you?
No, I had no idea. I had no idea. My mom had just been in Nashville. She would come down and stay for a month. My nieces were here and we'd, you know, all visit family. And she would come stay for usually a month. And then she would fly home, and she had just done her month, but she does once a year, and she'd flown home. And 2 weeks later, I'm standing on the stage, and she comes walking out with this sign, and I just turned around and I went, what are you doing here?
Wow, your mom.
They flew her.
That's, and she didn't say anything about it?
Mm-mm. Her and Steve Warner came out with the sign that had the date that they were going to induct me on it.
Oh, my God. That is awesome.
So something big was happening, and I was in shock, I think. It was just... I can't even believe I get to play the Opry, let alone be a member and walk on the stage. I get so nervous, Bobby, every time. I swear to God.
But not really, you don't.
Oh, I do. No, you have no idea. It has another level of nerves for me. And I don't know if it's because the audience is usually very quiet, especially that audience during COVID when you were hosting and we were up on stage and nobody was in
no
the audience.
Audience.
That was a very quiet audience.
That was extremely, that was tough.
A lot of people disguised as seats there.
Wow. That's so cool that they flew your mom down. And her and Steve Warner came out. Yeah.
They were hiding her in a broom closet backstage because they didn't want me to see her before she walked out. So she said, I could hear you walking up and down the hallway and talking, and I couldn't come out and say it. They were telling me to just stay in this janitor's closet at the Opry.
That's so cool. And they must have obviously known how much she meant to you.
Oh, of course.
Which is why they made the big difference.
My mom was around a lot of that stuff, and she even acted as like a little bit of a personal assistant for me for a while. And every manager I hired back then, I made sure they met my mom because I wanted to get... She was a good judge of character. She had a good intuition about people and trustworthiness, and I think my current manager even had to meet her. Poor Clarence.
I never say poor Clarence, for the record.
Poor Clarence. Never. You know Clarence.
I do, yes. Okay, so so what are you going to do on the road? Are you doing a bunch of shows this year?
Yeah, I took last summer off. I toured with Reba McEntire last year, which was fantastic.
What'd you think about her national anthem?
Oh, she killed it. Yeah. She kept it true. I think the national anthem should, unless you're Whitney Houston, you know, and can actually land on the mat every note you hit. But Reba just did. She did it the way she would do it, mm-hmm. not trying to be somebody else doing it.
You're right.
And so she nailed it. And the poison confidence under pressure is she's always had that. I want half the confidence she has.
Does she have it, though, or does she make us think she has it? Because she is awesome.
Well, I
wonder if she goes home and is...
She's a great actress, too, but when she told me she was going to get to do the national anthem 2 weeks before they announced it, because I was at a chili cook-off at her house, and I said, oh, my God, I would just piss my pants. And she said... Me too. And I'm like, you will not. she's just like, are you just trying to make me feel better about my lack of confidence by saying that? But she got up there. It was just amazing seeing how the grace under pressure that we all hold ourselves to the Dolly and Reba gold standard. I don't know the situations they've, I mean, Dolly, that thing, the cheerleader thing. I mean, my God, that's confidence. I want to bottle just a hair of it.
And you toured with Reba, and so you did a bunch of those shows.
Yeah, I did I think we did 30, mm-hmm. and then I took the summer off, and then just planned on working really hard in 2024 and with some things going on and around that. So we have a very busy year coming up, and this is probably going to be one of my best and biggest touring years since the 90s. And 90s country is so hot right now, too, and I think that... that plays into some of it too. And just the fact that I think more younger people want to see us, you know, they want us to play our hits, and they're the artists that are hot right now that are talking about their influences. This makes me feel are the 90s act, you know, they're calling it the new classic format, which is doesn't seem that long ago to me, but I guess it was,
you know, me either, but I guess it was, same, except pays, you know, 90s pay awesome now. I mean, if you're 90s, you can buy shoes, clothes, anything from the 90s, artists, hip hop, Creed, although that's 2000, like all the stuff where we were broke, now all of our people have money and they get to pay and actually come and watch us now, which is cool because they can actually not ask their mom for money.
Well, exactly. It's and
bring their kids.
The generation. Yeah. The generational thing is really cool. You see, I see people in meet and greets with their kids and grandkids if they were, mm-hmm. you know, of a certain age at that time. And it's just, you know, and then the 18-year-old girls singing every word to Better Things to Do in the front row wearing their mom's vintage T-shirt that they got at the George Strait show I opened in 1996. It's just like, yeah, this came from my mom. She was going to throw it out. And I tore the shit out of it. And it's cool now. I put some bedazzles on it. They tie it and they put,
let me decorate it. I'm going to ask you about Toby to kind of wrap this up.
Oh, man.
You know, with Toby a bunch too. Give me a Toby story memory.
Well, it's not just one memory. I mean, I toured with him and I kind of looked at him like a big brother. You know, we talked a lot. He gave a lot of advice. He was always very honest, brutally honest, and told the truth. I would ask him questions that I think some people were like, wow, I can't believe she just asked him that question. And we would, after the shows, you know, go to his bus. And I would just get to be a part of, a Toby Keith bus party. The bus is bouncing up and down. Brian O'Connell's on there DJing from his computer. And I'm just like, I felt like I was just, got to be in the cool kids club. And Toby played basketball with the crew and the bands every single day. And I have a radio show, and I interviewed him for this radio show.
You act like I don't know that, by the way.
Well, I don't know what you know.
I know what you're saying. And by the way, when you win the awards, I'm like, all right, whatever. And then it makes me feel lesser than. But
oh, yeah, I'm not winning awards. No. I'm winning only women. I won a Gracie Award. You don't qualify for that because you're a boy. And congratulations on all your awards, by the way. You've got a lot of them. I'm still saying I can still get a CMA award as a radio host. I never got one as an artist, and it was my childhood dream to get a CMA award. So I'm like, man, if Bobby Bones would just, you know, retire.
Well, please God, I can't retire. I'm not going to retire. I have no worth if I'm not doing this. That's funny.
But back to Toby, he was great. We would always like dip together. Back then I would dip school.
Oh.
And I'd walk on the bus, and he'd hand me a solo cup with a napkin in it.
That's hilarious.
And he'd borrow one from me, and I'd borrow one from him, and just stand there talking just about everything. And I remember getting really hammered with Dean Dillon on his bus. Mm-hmm. And I don't even remember getting back to my bus. And Toby said, I watched you walk back to your bus to make sure you were all right. How are you feeling today? And then always so cool, so respectful. And when I remember one thing he said when he was doing press for that tour, and they said, well, Terry Clark's here coming out as your opening act. And he said, Terry Clark's one of the most underrated artists out there. And that to me, just like, he's not somebody to just throw stuff out there like that. Cause he's so honest. It meant the world to me that he said that.
Yeah.
And then I interviewed him for the radio show, and I think this was right before he got diagnosed with cancer, or right around the time, because it was right around 2 years ago, a little over 2 years ago. And the first thing he said was, you know, I'm all, you know, getting ready to interview, and I'm like, okay, Toby, you ready? Ready? He goes, you want a dip? And I'm like, did you hear me? You want a dip? He's just always great. We talked a bit after the interview, and he said, call me, we'll go to lunch, because I was frustrated with creative stuff. And, you know, I'm like, I could really stand to talk to you right now and get your advice on a few things. And he had a record label and stuff. And he said, call me, we'll go to lunch. And the whole COVID thing was going, it was just, yeah, I didn't get to get to, I wish I'd have gotten to get together with him one more time, you know, but it's a tremendous loss. I think he was one of the greatest songwriters of all time in country music, and a great entertainer. A great guy, and didn't bother him to disagree with you, and didn't care if he didn't care if you agreed or disagreed. He just said what he felt.
Well, I'm excited for you. What a day.
Well, we talked about a lot.
Yeah.
We covered a lot.
No, yeah, a lot about you. But I'm just saying, you have such cool stuff coming up. It's, like you said, it's going to be a big year for you.
It's going to be fun. It's going to be something new and not new. Nostalgic with a new flair, and I think that it's going to be fun.
Well, when we can announce it, let's do something again.
I would love to.
Awesome. I'm a big fan of yours.
I'm a big fan of yours too.
It's super.
I appreciate what you do, because I know it's not always easy, and you're congratulations on all your success.
You
deserve it. You're a mogul.
I am consistent.
Comfortably consistent.
I show up. Like I tell my guys, just show up and be pretty good all the time, and occasionally be great, because you can't be great all the time.
No.
But if you're just consistent.
Yeah.
Like, that's what I try to do.
Consistency is key.
Absolutely.
You got it.
On Instagram, Terry Clark Music. On TikTok, at Terry Clark. You have a big TikTok following.
I do?
Yeah. You do.
I guess I do. Well, that's awesome. You know, I have some social media people that help me with that.
Hey, whatever.
They're very good.
Whatever. Yep. That's awesome.
Thank you very much.
Well, it's been a real treat. We did over an hour, so I don't want to keep you any longer, but this has been really fun for me. And then when we can talk about the cool stuff, let's talk about the cool stuff.
All right.
We talked about us, both of us.
Yes.
But when we
it was a great free therapy session.
How about this? We talked backward a lot. Let's talk forward next time.
Okay, we'll do that.
All right, Terry,
thanks,
good to
Bobby.
See you.
Yeah. Good to see you.
Thanks for listening to a Bobbycast production.
This is the year to stop overpaying for your family plan. So choose a Straight Talk Wireless family plan. Unlimited data, talk, and text on a reliable 5G network. And you can get a new line starting at $25 per line per month for 4 lines. Plus taxes and fees and no contracts. That's good decision making. Available at Walmart and on straighttalk.com. Family plan discount with 4 lines. All on the Silver Unlimited plan. Not combinable with auto pay discount. In times of traffic, your data may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Video streams at up to 480p.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hey, guys. Back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah. And some waves. So we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that.
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in.
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it.
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby.
Wait. Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.